Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're listening to a very special episode of Real College Podcast. This week, we become This Twin Cities Life. We're going to parody This American Life, and we hope you guys enjoy it.
This Twin Cities Life is brought to you by Inaudible, with over 100,000 titles. Are you serious? They all sound the same. Okay. With over 100,000 titles, you can hear classics like Pride and Prejudice.
Is it a truth universally acknowledged that a thing of vain possession of a good fortune must be a one of life?
Can you speak up?
However, little is known, the feelings and views of such a man may be beyond his first emerging entering a neighborhood. He was considered rightful property of someone or supposed to die. My dear Mr. Bennett, said him one day. Have you heard of this? This is a park. This is just Mr. Bennett, I hear not.
Inaudible, where you can hear books mumbled to you.
Frustration is a normal part of the human experience. Just take a look at babies. They can't do a lot of things. And what do? They scream or cry in frustration. This week, we're going to take a look at all the things that frustrate humans and how we deal with it. You're listening to This Twin Cities Life. I'm Myra Glass. Act 1, Career Frustration. Being frustrated with your career is something everyone in the world probably experiences, even me, your humble podcast host. I know, shocking, right? But even I get frustrated with my job. Especially when my reporters keep howling and shrieking in the dungeon and don't produce a mandatory number of stories each day. And because career frustration is so normal, sometimes even people who seem like they have everything decide to take on a different path. Alex Schumacher has the story.
We all experience frustration with our careers. Maybe we feel like the boss doesn't appreciate us, or we feel like we really deserve that raise that we didn't get. Or maybe the host of your podcast keeps you and all the other reporters imprisoned in a German dungeon and forces you to do 10 stories a day and work 16-hour days and doesn't let you sleep. You know, we all experience career frustration. But imagine you had everything anyone could ever dream of. Fame, fortune, millions of beloved fans who called themselves the Tree Hive. Well, Triance had all this, and more. And yet, as of last month, she's decided to give it all up and pursue a career in accounting. I sat down with the world-famous superstar to talk about her decision to leave fame and fortune behind.
Well, you know, I always just felt like it was really overrated being Triance because, you know, people always ask me if that was my real name. And, you know, obviously, like, it's like the most normal name in the world. So, you know, my fame just kind of started at birth and just went on. But it was just really sad, you know, just being famous forever. Like, can you imagine having to work for fame? I just thought it was so overweighted. So, yeah, that's what my career was like.
I asked Triance to tell me about the meaning behind one of her most famous and Grammy Award-winning songs, Living Up in That Redwood Tree.
You know, the most important lyric, I would say, is getting up in that good redwood, get that good redwood in you. It's just really interesting the way those lyrics kind of plan themselves out. I just really base it off of Ellen DeGeneres, you know, because when you think of Ellen, you just think of, like, this big, elegant redwood tree. And if you had the option, like, why wouldn't you just take some of that bark off and just insert it in your body? You know what I mean?
Finally, I asked Triance to talk about why she decided to become an accountant and if she had a message to all the Triance fans out there who will deeply, deeply miss this star and her wonderful music over the years.
I switched over to taking some classes at the Carleton School of Business, and now I just really feel like accounting is just calling to me. All the numbers and everything, it's just like so mathematical. I just feel like it's so much better than touring and doing music. Music is overrated. Just remember that Triance is always in your heart and that plants will bloom wherever your tears fall, because in the world of the living, Triance is always with you.
Before I left this majestic queen of music, though, I had to ask her about the rumors that have been circulating that instead of pursuing accounting, the real reason she left music was to dig a giant pit in her backyard as a sacrifice to a new cult she joined. She was not too happy that I brought up this question.
I just have no comment about that. The whole is my essence and my essence alone, and you don't have to know what kind of wizardry goes on in that hole. That's just for me, and you didn't have any business looking into that hole. Thank you.
Wanting to know more about the mysterious hole in the back of Triance's house, I spoke to a source who claimed to know a lot about the pit and was a Triance expert, but asked us not to use their real name on air. I started by asking what made them such an expert on Triance.
Honestly, I don't even listen to her music. I just like to sit outside her house and watch her.
Next, I asked the obvious question. What is in the hole in the back of Triance's house?
Me, but also dirt. I sit in it all the time.
I played this shocking testimonial for Triance and asked her again to comment on the hole in the back of her house.
I cannot believe this. This is utter disrespect.
I became agitated. What is in the hole? I screamed at Triance. Alas, I pressed the question one too many times, and Triance began strangling with my own microphone.
I swear I will kill you. I will kill you. I will kill you.
Oh, to be a reporter. Well, it was truly an honor to interview Triance, and I think I speak for all the Triance fans out there when I say, Triance, you will be deeply missed. And from this Twin Cities life, I'm Alex Schumann.
Stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping, with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. Barely getting by, it's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind.
Act 2, Anger Management. Managing our anger has never been an easy task. Since the dawn of our creation, mankind has experimented with everything from aromatherapy to Freudian psychology, and yet we still have angry people. For everyone who has always wanted to take their anger out on an actual, tangible something, the Turner family in St. Paul offers a solution. A whole store of solutions, actually.
Hey, no, please, that's valuable. Ah!
That's Mrs. Turner's from Turner's Turn Back the Clock Antiques, Minneapolis and St. Paul's first rage room.
No, that's not what it is. We really are just an antique shop. No, get out of my shop. That's it.
Rage rooms, anger shops, and vexation stations have been popping up all over the country after the trend's first appearance in Dallas, Texas, when Donna Alexander began inviting strangers into her garage to break random items. Mrs. Turner's shop, however, has a somewhat lengthier past.
We were, Jesus Christ, we are an antique shop. We've been open since 1903, and a lot of the things in the shop go back much farther than that. We have a mink stolen from England during the reign of Queen Victoria in the 1830s. We have a discarded handkerchief of the F. Scott Fitzgerald family. He's kind of a local celebrity. What else? Oh, we have half a lampshade from Bob Dylan's apartment in Dinkytown. From, you know, when he lived in Dinkytown. We also sell clocks. That's another reason we call ourselves Turn Back the Clock Antiques.
And it's the clocks that really bring in the Rage Room's crowds.
We can't keep them out. You know, we used to have clocks displayed all over the place. All sorts of clocks, from cuckoo clocks to grandfather clocks, alarm clocks to wristwatches, every clock you can think of, every clock you can fathom. And we never had a lot of incidents, you know, except for the occasional kid that might accidentally lean against something too valuable or whatever. They started coming in, geez, about a year ago. Some hooligan had posted a sign on my shop sign as a joke, and it said, Rage Room, $25. I was like, what the hell is a rage room? I didn't think much of it, but some hoodlums recognized what it meant, and they came to my shop with baseball bats. Ah! There were too many kids to take on. Jesus, I worked so hard on those clocks. My husband, God bless his soul, he was a horologist. He fixed up old clocks, which is now deemed a dangerous occupation because you're so exposed to all these elements like mercury. He repaired every clock in this shop, and he died because of it. And watching them destroy everything he died for, God, it still hurts.
A surprising group of customers for Mrs. Turner's Rage Room has been local law enforcement.
Oh, don't even get me started on the cops. The greatest example of corruption there is. I called the local police department the first time they all came in here, and instead of arresting people and assessing my damages, they just joined in on the chaos.
When we first heard of a rage room in the Twin Cities, we were ecstatic. You know, being a police officer is difficult for a number of reasons, one of the biggest being the stress. And we've tried everything the cities has to offer us. I've gone to several local masseuses. Jackson over there did free yoga lessons. Ziggy even did acupuncture for a while, but none of it worked. Just last week, we filled the whole department with those lavender-scented stress relief candles. You know, nothing has ever done the job as well as this place. There's just something about breaking timeless, valuable artifacts that really cracks the tension out of those shoulders. Makes you forget a hard day on the force.
Do you know what that was? That was a Victorian tea set from over 200 years ago. We could have sold that to a renowned art collector, and now the only place for it is in a dustpan. We've had to move almost everything downstairs. These trinkets you see up here, they don't even represent a millionth of what this store is actually worth. But I just can't keep the valuable stuff up here, you know?
As a finale for our interview, Mrs. Turner was kind enough to let me have a swing.
So this vase, we had it assessed for $3 million. Only because it was one of the only items Prince's next of kin didn't claim from his estate. It was from his bedside table, where he slept, right next to his face.
And I can just, I can use my microphone?
What? Stop! No! No!
Up next, we have Act 3, Dad Defeated. But first, a word from our sponsors.
What if we could fix the food system by starting from scratch? At Green Apron, we're working with you to do just that. For a basic fee of $20 a month, we deliver the seeds for you to grow food that's higher quality, better for the environment, and more delicious. With our simple planting guides, you can have farm-fresh ingredients in your backyard in no time. Just plant, care, harvest. Just like a garden. And for our premium subscribers, we'll deliver you one of our cheery, knowledgeable farmers for the season. For a small upgrade to platinum, we'll even bring you two indentured farmers and a cook for the whole year. All you have to do is sit back, relax, and enjoy the fresh cooked meals. Any night of the week. You don't have to lift a finger when you've got Green Apron's live-in help tilling your land and serving your family, harvesting your wheat, caring for your cows and other livestock, all for the cost of your subscription, plus food, housing, and clothes for your growing legions of farmers and peasants. A better food system, fresh and catered for you, and you don't need to do a thing. That's Green Apron.
Most of us are familiar with the dad joke, a pun not particularly funny, but told with enormous enthusiasm, and maybe even a sly knowledge of unfunniness. Maybe it wasn't your dad that told them, but another older male relative, grandpa, uncle, godfather, etc. But you've heard a dad joke before, and know one when you hear it. This week, we take an insight look at the life and thoughts of a dad whose identity has been transformed by dad jokes, and by the daughter whose life has been shaped by them. The frustration in the story isn't the grimacing frustration brought on by a particularly corny bit of dad humor. It's communication-related frustration, related to some of the most essential parts of life. Family, identity, meaning. What happens when your life is ruled by one thing, and what happens when you pass it on to your child? What's hardest to understand this story, both for the family and outsiders, is how life ever got to be this way. What's more important is how the family learns to live through it. Here's Anthony Middlemarch, dad joker extraordinaire, telling it in his own words.
For me, it started when I was in law school.
All right, from our rule of law reading, can anyone explain the difference between unlawful and illegal, as Bingham puts it? Yeah, you?
Well, as I understand it, unlawful is against the law, whereas illegal is just a sick bird. I started doing it out of class, too. When I was out with friends, I would lose control. I just couldn't stop myself. Hey, saw something pretty weird before you got here. A sandwich walked into the bar, and the bartender just looked at him and said, "Sorry, we don't serve food here." And you won't believe what happened after that. A three-legged dog sidled in here up to the bar and told the bartender he was looking for the man who shot his pa. Didn't know it was so rough in the neighborhood.
Aww.
Same day, I saw three guys coming towards here. Two of them walked into a bar, but the third guy ducked. Different people tried to talk to me about it. Intervene, you know. I even tried a support group for those with premature dad humor. Nothing worked. I think because I just wasn't ready. Ultimately, I love making jokes like this. It was what I was known for. People at school, at work, around town. They knew me as the dad joke guy. I'd been searching for an identity, a way of looking at the world, and I'd found it. Dad jokes. I decided to embrace it. Do I enjoy making courthouse puns? Guilty.
This is the dad I've grown up with. I always knew our family was a little different, but I didn't realize how much it affected me until years later. Growing up, it was normal. When I went to choir practice, Dad would always remind me to bring a bucket to carry the tune. On all my medical forms growing up, my dad put down red for my blood type. To this day, no one knows my actual blood type. I guess, with a family like this, I shouldn't be surprised how things turned out. I mean, I started early, earlier than my dad.
Hey, sweetie, did you get a haircut?
No, Dad, I got them all cut.
We thought it was cute at first, just like the grown-ups, you know? We encouraged it. By the time she was in elementary school, she was finishing my jokes before I was. I remember once it was time to get on the school bus, and I walked into Sarah's room, and she was just sitting there looking at the ceiling. I asked her what she was doing, and she said she was just thinking about the ceilings in the house. They weren't the best, but they were definitely up there, she said. That's when I first started to realize this was serious. She'd been waiting in there for me, just waiting to make this joke at the risk of missing school. It got me thinking, was I raising her right? Was I just passing on my own weaknesses? But also, I hate to admit it, I started to feel like it was competition. I was the original dad joke master, and an actual dad. I'd waited all these years to be not a premature dad joker, but a real dad, making real dad jokes. And here my daughter was, an excellent dad joker in her own right. I had to stay on my toes to keep up. Hamburgers tonight?
Yeah, cow with no legs is in the fridge.
Cow with no legs?
Yeah, the ground beef. It's in the fridge.
It got really hard in high school when she was dating Van Traitrol.
Van would love this shirt.
I didn't know vehicles needed a tire like this.
They don't need just a tire, they've got to have four.
And I mean, I don't want to complain too much. There's plenty of families where it feels like nobody's got much in common, or where the parents and kids are at odds. But it's been a daily frustration. I've been struggling. It's hard to talk about anything really important. Hey, honey, how are you doing? Good, good. Glad to hear things are going well out there. Listen, I've got some bad news. Grandpa Al died a couple weeks ago, you know? Yeah. We'd been expecting it a while. He was in bad shape. I know you were close to him. But the thing that's worst is about how he got buried in the wrong cemetery. They're gonna have to dig him up and reinter him in a couple weeks.
Oh my god. I can't believe that. I've never heard anything like that happening.
Yeah, well, I sure don't know how it happened. I guess you could call it a grave mistake.
Well, you don't have to look at it that way. On the bright side, you could just see it as a plot twist.
Even when she lost her job, I never really talked to her about it. Never really found out how she felt or if she needed help with anything. Losing a job, you know, it happens to everyone. I tried to work for a calendar company out of Los Angeles for a while. I thought I was doing well there, but ended up getting fired anyways. They didn't look kindly in all the days I kept taking off. Said the calendars were inaccurate.
I guess that worked out all right though, Dad, with technology and everything. The days of the wall calendar are numbered. This was my dream job though, and I didn't even make it through the interview. The interviewer asked me about the gap in my resume, and I couldn't stop myself. I told him the gap was from falling asleep on the space key.
Well, you could get a job doing landscaping or yard work. I got a buddy in that business. He says in the fall, they're just raking it in. Also, I know a guy in archaeology, but I wouldn't advise you to try it. It's a career in ruins. He ended up getting a job in the moisturizer industry. They say it's pretty easy if you just apply daily. That could be something to try. It's just questions everyone has. Am I doing this right? Am I prepared, you know? Did I make too many mistakes? Have I been a good parent? A good person in general? And it's always hard to say. Sometimes you answer yourself with a big yes, and other times you feel like the worst of the worst. But in the end, I've lived my life the way I wanted to. And even if it isn't perfect, you know, even if I wished me and Sarah could communicate better, that's sometimes how it works out. And you know, all the intentions have been in the right place, and we still talk a lot. I raised her as a competent, bright girl who's now a happy young woman, even if her sense of humor is 30 years beyond her age. I did the best with what I had to start with. Want to hear a joke about a piece of paper? It's terrible.
That's all for this Twin Cities Life, also known as Real College Podcast. This show is a production of Radio K. It's produced by Alex Schumacher, Liv Riggins, and Emily Allen. Host and managing editor is yours truly, Jacob Maldonado Medina, a.k.a. Myra Glass. Thanks for listening, and tune in next Monday at 6:30 for another episode of Real College Podcast.